Glades Media presents Big Lake Now, our weekly public affairs program highlighting the issues affecting communities around Lake Okeechobee. Big Lake Now, exclusively on Pure Country WAFC. And now, your host, News and Public Affairs Director, Nicole Reed.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Big Lake Now. Today, we're going to be discussing a topic that not a lot of people want to. Well, we're going to do it for you. Today, we're starting the conversation about end-of-life planning. And to help us out and give us all of the expert information on the matter, Britton Swank is on the line. Good morning, Ms. Swank.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's our pleasure. Thank you so much for carving out a little bit of time in your day to take out some time and answer some questions that I know a lot of people are thinking about, especially in our current climate. So thank you again, Britton. If we can go ahead and get started, the first question is, can we just kind of give an overview of what end-of-life planning means? What is that all about?
So I think for a lot of people, what comes to mind when they hear the words or the phrase end-of-life planning, I think people think most often of a living will. Mm-hmm. And a living will is a document that addresses life-prolonging procedures. So what do you want to have happen if you're very, very ill and aren't going to get any better? And the answer from one person is not necessarily the same for another person. In Florida, kind of the statutory criteria is that this we're talking about an individual who is end-stage terminal or in a persistent vegetative state. And so in writing, you're answering the question, if that is the situation in which you find yourself, how do you want life-prolonging procedures to be addressed? Do you want them? Do you not want them? When I talk to clients about this, I think most people would ultimately, when I get finished with the conversation, what they're really kind of saying to me is that they value quality of life over quantity of life. They want to be comfortable and as pain-free as possible, but a lot of people don't want to be kept alive if they don't have quality of life. But again, that's not the answer that everyone gives. And so what you're trying to do in this living will document is get your wishes on paper and make sure that you have control over that process. But you're right. It's something that a lot of people have a hard time talking about or even thinking about.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot involved in it. I mean, there's so many different elements. There's so many different topics. There's things that a lot of people, as you mentioned, don't even think about when it comes to situations like this. Like I was reading something about guardianship. I don't think I've heard that term before. How does guardianship or what does that mean? How does it play into end-of-life planning?
So guardianship can come up in a number of different contexts. Mm-hmm. And it most often, I would say, comes up, at least certainly in my practice, when people have not addressed estate planning in general, including end-of-life planning. So just to kind of circle back a little bit, mm-hmm. with the end-of-life planning, one of the other components of that, and I think there are a couple, is not just end-of-life, it's also, well, maybe you're not going to pass away, you know, imminently, but you're in a situation where you can't give consent. You can't express your wishes.
Gotcha.
And so that document is another one. It's in Florida, it's a designation of healthcare surrogate. And you're identifying, again, in writing, this is something that you do, who makes your medical decisions if you can't make them yourself. Obviously, it becomes critical that you have conversations with whoever you might name, that you name people who are willing to follow your wishes. And just so everybody knows, it is possible to have a healthcare surrogate that is effective immediately. In other words, without a doctor saying that you can't make your own decision. That tends to be less popular with clients. And I think most of us want to make our own decisions for as long as we can. But but that does sort of fill a need, I think, in situations where clients might be struggling with mental health issues. Mm. And so it saves families a lot of time not to have to go get a doctor's letter. But we see guardianship cases happen when people don't have their wishes in writing with respect to end of life, healthcare decision making, for example, financial decision making, which we can talk about. But that is a very expensive process. Mm. And I think it's one that you want to certainly avoid if you can. It's a critical part of our system, right. And it's a way that we protect people. But guardianship is a court process. So what happens is a petition is filed, at least with respect to most adult guardianship cases that I have. A petition is filed in court alleging that the person at issue has become or lacks capacity to do one or more things. Could be the capacity to contract, the capacity to make their own decisions, to drive, to vote, to get married, all of these things that certainly in our country, we are lucky to live in a place where we get to make those decisions mm-hmm. ourselves. And mm-hmm. so the flip side is, if we're going to take those rights away from someone, there needs to be a lot of due process. We want to make sure if we're going to remove rights from someone that we do it in a way that is the least restrictive and allows them to maintain as much dignity certainly as possible. And because of, I think, the conflict with those issues, it just becomes very expensive. So, yeah. For example, when a case gets filed, an examining committee is appointed, and the alleged incapacitated person is appointed an attorney. And so now just right there in the process, we have a petitioner who's filed the case represented by an attorney. Now we have an alleged incapacitated person who's represented by an attorney. And now we're talking about a panel of three medical professionals that are going to independently examine and meet with this person and report back to the court. So that's a lot of professionals
yes,
to be paid.
Absolutely.
And so right there, I would say if you can avoid that process for yourself and your family, I think that's a really smart thing to do. And again, I think most of the cases that I see happen because people haven't done any planning. Mm. It is true, though, that you can have cases where people did everything they were supposed to do, everything that you would want them to do. They had estate planning documents prepared. They had those tough conversations with family members. And yet, because of no fault of their own, they become ill or get a disease like Lewy body dementia. They mm-hmm. may have hallucinations and really end up being kind of a more of a behavioral problem. And the only person that really can make someone live, for example, in a locked facility where they'll be safe and can't, you know, try to drive their car to Michigan alone
right,
when
right.
they're not well and mm-hmm. shouldn't be driving, that's going to be a judge. So there are, unfortunately, cases where even in the best of circumstances where people did everything right, the court really needs to step in to protect that person. But your best shot, I think, of avoiding the guardianship altogether mm-hmm. is getting your ducks in a row
wow.
In advance.
And can we start with just a regular will? I think that's the most familiar way for a lot of people. Is the will kind of like the put all in place type of document? Like, as long as we have the
sure.
will in place, then everything should fall in place?
Well, I think I absolutely agree with you that is the estate planning document that most people are familiar
yes.
with when we sit down to talk. And, you know, you see and sometimes in the movies, there's the reading of the will
yes.
and it's all very
formal and
exciting. And yeah. I that's not exactly what happened.
Oh.
But I think one of the key things that is a misunderstanding that's out there is that if you have a will, you can avoid probate after you die. So probate is just another court process.
Yeah.
And anytime you're going to court to deal with something,
money,
and probate's not the worst thing in the world, but it's a process that's overseen by the court.
Mm-hmm.
And that means there are filing fees, mm-hmm. there's going to be an attorney involved, mm-hmm. Generally. And so that takes time and it takes money.
Yep.
And so people, I think, need to be aware, just because you have a will does not mean there won't be a probate or a court process when you pass away, because a will really identifies in a probate who will be in charge,
right,
and where your assets go after you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's your opportunity to identify the people you want in charge and where you want things to go after you pass away. And that's what makes a will so important. But it's not necessarily true that having the will means your family's not going to be dealing with the courthouse
right.
after you pass away. But it's still an important piece
yes.
of your estate plan, for sure.
Okay. All right. So what about right now in our climate that we're in? I've got a lot of listeners that have called in to inquire about nursing home care. What do we need to know about families that have relatives in the care of a nursing home right now?
This is so tough.
I know.
And I have a number of families struggling with this issue.
Oh.
I've been through in my own family having loved ones in a nursing home
mm-hmm.
or in assisted living. And I always believe that the people who get the best care
mm-hmm.
are the people who have the most visitors. When we talk about, you know, people will say, well, which nursing home do you like the best? Or I would rather have a family look to a facility that is somewhere where they can visit then go pick one that's 2 hours away that, you know, is brand new, for
right.
example. But right now, because of the restrictions in access, it is very difficult for families to stay on top of kind of what's going on with their loved ones. I do think facilities have been really trying to keep family members apprised of things.
Mm-hmm.
I know because of my involvement in a particular case,
mm-hmm.
we ended up on the call, basically the distribution of a daily voicemail coming out from an executive director of a local facility. You know, this is what we did today. This is what we had for lunch. There was, you know, blackjack in this room and we had this. So, so I know people are really trying to help with that family connection.
Good.
But I think certainly my family members, if it's not an urgent need that somebody be in a nursing home right now,
mm-hmm.
they're really trying to delay that placement because
yeah.
of health concerns
yeah.
with COVID.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, unfortunately had people get that in facilities.
Oh, I hate to hear that. Do you deal with DNRs at all? Do not resuscitate orders?
So that's another great topic. And I think much like the will, sometimes there's some confusion surrounding that.
Okay.
Because I think the crossover seems to happen with the living will and the do not resuscitate order, because they are definitely not the same thing.
Gotcha.
So in my opinion, if you're an adult, you should have a living will.
Okay.
Now, that does not mean you should have a do not resuscitate order. a do not resuscitate order is not something that, for example, that I'm as an attorney going to draft. It's a document or a form, rather, that's a Florida Department of Health form, and it's on yellow paper. And it says State of Florida do not resuscitate order, and that has to be signed by you or the individual as well as a physician. Mm-hmm. And if you are unable to sign a do not resuscitate order, your healthcare decision maker or surrogate, for example, could sign that do not resuscitate order in your place. And so one of the conversations that needs to be had, another one of these fun conversations, mm-hmm. With whoever might be making your medical decisions, is at what point might you want a do not resuscitate order signed? And what you're saying is, you, if you go into cardiac or respiratory failure, you don't want to be resuscitated. And so, for example, I can tell you I definitely want to be resuscitated.
Yes.
If I were to go into cardiac or respiratory failure during this interview,
help me.
I definitely want that. That help.
Right.
I have a good quality of life. I enjoy living. A lot of people fully recover from that kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. However, there are also people who, certainly those that have a terminal diagnosis, or I have one of my favorite clients did have cardiac event, mm-hmm. let's just call it, last year, and he was really mad that he was resuscitated.
What?
And he said, he's in his 90s, his spouse has been gone for a number of years. Mm-hmm. He said he just feels like he's had a good life. He feels good about the things he's been able to accomplish, and he feels that he's ready to go if that's what happens. And that's his choice, and that's a discussion for himself and his physician, because again, it's a doctor's order.
Gotcha.
So he's got to have that conversation with his physician. And if he's unable to, his surrogate would be able to sign that. But most of the time I see the surrogate being in the position to make that decision whether to sign it or not. Other than clients who have a terminal diagnosis, most of the time I see a DNR being signed. Mm-hmm. It's the surrogate who's being confronted with that decision, which is why I think it's important to talk to people that you're naming. Mm-hmm. It's not nice to name people and not and then they don't find out until something happens. Surprise.
Yeah, no thanks. Wow, I couldn't imagine. Yeah. This next topic is probably one of the most difficult topics for me to discuss with my husband. But again, it's very necessary. It's not just because of COVID. It's not just because of, you know, diabetes. It's not just not because of anything. It's because, you know, it is inevitable. We have to talk about funeral arrangements. We have to know what each other wants once our time comes. What funeral arrangements do you want to be in place? Because again, just like a lot of the things you've already mentioned, these things can get messy when there's numerous kids involved, other family members, in-laws. We want to have these arrangements in place, in my opinion, so that it will keep your family member out of as much stress as possible. I've already lost you. Now I got to go and fight your family because we don't have anything in place regarding funeral arrangements. So is this something that you would recommend that we start immediately?
Yes. Okay. I always encourage people to, if they know what they want, mm-hmm. for their final arrangement, mm-hmm. and they can, even if they can afford to go ahead and make and pay for those arrangements, even, I think it's a great thing to do. There are certainly some important questions to ask, and talk about with the provider that you choose. For example, you know, what happens if you're traveling and you pass away in another state,
yeah.
or even another country, and
wow.
what would that look like?
Yeah.
And it's also important to know too, what kind of costs are you looking at?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a I've seen, you know, funeral arrangements or final arrangements that range from, you know, $1,200 to $70,000. And so what is your expectation about what you want? And I also think it's important to know what the cost of that might be.
Smart.
Because it's possible people are telling family members all these things that they want, but yet that may put a very big financial strain on the family. But you're absolutely right. It can, there can be and has been litigation over things like cremation versus
burial.
Burial,
yeah.
For example. Absolutely. And so to the extent you can have those conversations, get that, get your wishes actually in your documents. That's another thing that we do. As well as addressing organ donation, which I know that you can do on your driver's license. But if that's something you're willing to do, we get it in the document as well. Some of my clients have wanted their bodies donated to science. Those are all things that really could be upsetting for other family members. And so it's important, if that's something that's important to you, then you need to get that in writing. And I do, with all of these things that we're talking about, I really, although they are challenging to talk about sometimes, or at least for some people, I think these are conversations you have, not just because you want to make sure that your wishes are followed. They're conversations you have because you have people in your life that you love and care deeply about, and they're going to be suffering if you're suffering. And so to make their life harder at a time when they're suffering, I just think it's not nice. So sometimes kind of approaching it that way or kind of thinking about it that way gives people the strength and to kind of face it and power through and get through some of those decisions.
And I think that's
I
think that's absolutely the key. Like with anything, you power through it. And then on the other side, you can just relax. You can relax and rest assured that everything is taken care of. Now you got through that hard conversation and you're good.
And it's, you know, for me, based on what I do for a living, this is a topic that I bring up probably a little more frequently than my husband would care for. But we kind of joke about it. That's sort of our way to talk about it. He'll say, well, you know, maybe you should give me 30 days. Maybe I might perk up, you know. But it's our way of kind of getting through kind of those tough conversations.
Sure,
and I think people have to do what works for them. But just be committed to finding a way to having the conversation for sure.
And I definitely think finances is a big barrier for a lot of people. They're like, I don't even want to get started talking about a will and how much it costs. And people are just not even ready to, you know, dive into what the financial cost could be. But I'm sure, which of course we don't have time to get into today, but there are different ways and different opportunities that people can have, you know, to have some financial relief as it relates to this. But even if you just have the bare minimum of something in place, you could help us out with that. How can we find out more if we need more information about end of life planning or getting ready for the other side, if you will?
Sure. If you want to look at my website, I've tried to put a lot of information for people out, different types of documents.
Okay.
My particular website is www.swank.elderlaw.com. And I have different documents laid out, why they're important, what they do. Another thing, you know, nobody ever has to come and see me, but I've got some intake documents on my website that listeners can download, and it's no fun to fill out. I'll tell you that right now. I've done it for myself. My husband did not enjoy the process.
Yeah.
However, it's important to do it, and it helps you identify your assets, how they're titled. Because another thing, too, is people think things are titled one way. And when I say, let's go look at the statement, it's not surprising that that's not the way it's titled.
Wow.
And I think people, you're right, are afraid of sort of lawyers and costs
yes.
and things, but mm-hmm. you can sit down with an attorney and have a consultation, for example, and at least relatively inexpensively mm-hmm. Get options.
Yes.
And just because it's right, one thing is right for your next door neighbor does not mean that that's the answer for you.
Right, right. But at least get something started, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I would say, too, the biggest mistake, just I want to get that out there to listeners, that I see is not having a good durable power of attorney.
Mm.
It has tremendous financial consequences and is often what lands us in guardianship court.
Wow.
So I think people are unaware of that. The importance, I guess, of that document to being part of your plan.
Whew. Okay. And of course, all of this information is detailed on your website, swankelderlaw.com.
Yeah. It is.
Okay, great. Britton Swank, thank you so much for calling in this morning. What invaluable information and such an important conversation to have. And I love that you said you and your husband kind of find a humorous way to kind of deal with it, but you deal with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's going to be different for everybody. But thank you again for calling in. We'll make sure to have that website on hand. It's www.swankelderlaw.com. Again, Britton Swank, thank you so much once again for calling in and have a wonderful day.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Nicole. Thanks for inviting me.
And thank you all for listening to another edition of Big Lake Now. I've been your host, Nicole Reed. Stay tuned for more Pure Country with Nicole Reed right here on Pure Country WAFC.